If you enjoyed this episode of the Panel Show podcast, please leave us a review and hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. Hey everyone, welcome to the Panel Show podcast. Each month, we bring together two real journalists and two improvisers in character to talk about real-world topics, issues, and events. This episode is being recorded on Saturday, March 6th, 2021, live from our own homes over the internet via Zencaster. I'm your host, David Shore. I'm saying my name very seriously because it's a very serious show, but let's meet tonight's panel. First, our journalist, he's the Queen's Park Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star. Please welcome back to the show, Robert Benzie. Hello, Robert.
Hi, David.
Good to have you back. And she covers Queen's Park for the Globe and Mail, and you can also catch her Tuesday mornings on CTV's Your Morning and Friday nights on CBC's Power and Politics. Please welcome to the show, Laura Stone. Hello, Laura.
Hey there.
Great to have you here, Laura. Thanks for joining us. And tonight's improvisers are appearing as, he's a self-described lone wolf who plays by his own rules. Please welcome to the show, the not real Carver Brash. Hello, Carver.
Hello, David. Thank you so much for having me here.
Great to have you.
Yeah, great.
And joining Carver, please welcome back to the show, the completely fake mother of two, Donna. Hello, Donna.
Hello, David. It's so nice to be here with you again today. Hello, everyone. It's nice to see you on the radio. How is everyone dealing with COVID? I hope good.
I think we're all, you know, we were going to talk about COVID the show, but I decided not to because I'm sick of it.
Oh, I'm so tired of talking about COVID, David. I can't even tell you.
I mean, COVID's not, I'm going to say it, COVID's not real, you know, and then that's why it's best not to talk about something that's not real, so.
Okay, so trigger warning when Carver speaks because he believes COVID's not real.
Okay.
Let's start tonight by talking about last month's Bell Canada layoffs. We're sticking with this is an all-Canadian show, by the way. Trigger warning if you hate Canadians. But yeah, we're going to start talking about the Bell Canada layoffs. So Bell Canada laid off hundreds of employees last month across the country, including over 200 in the Greater Toronto area alone. Many on-air personalities were not notified that they had already performed their final show, including Dan O'Toole, who is one half of TSN's popular SportsCenter with Jay and Dan show. Bell Canada received over $120 million from the Canadian Emergency Wage Subsidy, or CEWS. I'm saying that wrong. It's not CEWS. Is it CEWS? Robert, do you know, or Laura, do either of you know? Is it CEWS? CEWS?
You didn't say this was going to be on the test, David.
I
have never heard anyone really refer to it like that.
It came out of my mouth, and I thought that just sounds racist for some reason. CEWS. But as I was practicing, I thought, well, I'm Jewish and it sounds like Jews. So I think CEWS is right. So we'll go with CEWS. Okay. So CEWS is the subsidy, the acronym, the Canadian Emergency Wage Subsidy. And Bell Canada, as I just said, got over $120 million last year for it. The subsidy was set up to help companies keep people employed during the pandemic. Since the beginning of COVID, Bell has continued to not only pay out dividends to its shareholders, but actually announced increases to their annual payouts. TELUS, which received over $39 million from CEWS, also announced an increase to their dividend payouts. Last month, Toronto Liberal MP Nate Erskine-Smith filed a private member's motion calling on the government to compel companies that receive money from CEWS to return any equivalent amounts that they paid in dividend or share buybacks. So, panel, do you think companies like Bell Canada and TELUS should have to pay back the money that they received for this wage subsidy? Also, why do you think they got the subsidy to begin with? Robert, why don't we start with you, Robert Benzie?
Well, David, in the interest of disclosure, I actually get paid some money by Bell Media because I do stuff on News Talk 1010 and CTV. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that my stipends come from the wage subsidy. Maybe they do. I am of two minds on this one. I mean, the media business is the pandemic has been very hard on many, many industries. And the media business is, of course, not excluded from the ramifications of COVID-19. I'm not sure I like penalizing companies after the fact, because it's almost like cutting off your nose to spite your face. If you say to Bell Media or some other company that they have to repay the money that they got, couldn't that lead to more layoffs and job cuts? So you have to be pretty careful how you navigate these things.
That's an interesting point, Robert. But Bell paid out close to $3 billion last year in 2020 in dividends. So a company, you know, that can pay out that much in dividends, do they really need government money? Don, a mother of two, why don't we get your opinion on all of this?
David, let me tell you something, okay?
Yes.
This is a subject that's very near and dear to my heart, because let me tell you something. Today I was on the phone with my mother, Barbara, and mm-hmm. she said to me that someone called her and they asked for her insurance number so she could sign up to get an inoculation for the vaccine. I said, what did you do? She said, Donna, what am I, an idiot? I told them to leave the name and phone number and I would call them back after I spoke to my daughter. I said, Ma, you hang up the phone. Whenever that happens, you just hang up the phone. And then we got into this big discussion and I said, listen, there's got to be something Bell can do about this. So I say, take some of that money, put together a posse like they used to in the olden days, and go find these guys that are calling up old people. That's what they should do with the money, David.
Okay, so you think they should solve a completely different problem with the money?
Well, look, that's it's a big problem. I think the elderly and caring for our elderly, that's a big problem in society today. David, I'm a mother of two. I'm going to be old one day, and those kids are going to look after me. And let me tell you, I don't know how good a job they're going
to
do.
All right, that's something to keep for us to all keep an eye on as we age. Laura Stone, what do you think about this?
Well, full disclosure as well, I also appear on some Bell programs on CTV. Right. But look, you know, when these layoffs were announced, we lost some really great reporters at Queen's Park who were part of the News Talk 1010 news division. And it sucks right. to see your colleagues, lose their jobs in the blink of an eye. And so I really feel for them. I think the media industry is brutal right now. And we've seen these stories time and time again, notwithstanding the fact that we're in a pandemic. But I think the optics are certainly not good in terms of paying out dividends or increasing them at a time that you're accepting the wage subsidy. But I also think that this program didn't have any stipulations. This was put together extremely quickly to help businesses. There was no time to set up any requirements or checks and balances. It had to be paid out, and there's nothing to say that this didn't keep some of those people on for longer if the company mm-hmm. didn't get the wage subsidy. So, you know, it's a bad situation. I feel bad for them, and I think that, you know, people looking at this probably don't like what they see, but I also think that the business model is a little more complex than we're making it out to be.
Right. Well, that's interesting. Interesting point. Carver Brash, yeah. Lone Wolf, what do you think about all this?
Well, I just want to make something really clear right off the top, you know, kind of differentiate myself from especially two people on this panel. I do not have a Bell phone. Okay, I am a Kudo guy. I appreciate Kudo's, their branding. They got that little wrestler, and I think he is very good. Now, I don't think any of the listeners out there understand that Bell Media is a what they call conglomerate. Okay. And what that means is that they got their fingers in too many damn pies. And when I see a lot of fingers in pies, I say you should not be getting money. So, Mr. David, what I'm saying is that I have been trying to start my own internet provider. It is proving harder than I thought. So if anyone listening could help me out with that, I would love it. But we cannot trust these companies because they just got too much power, Mr. David.
Interesting. Laura, you mentioned about the optics of it not looking good. I wonder, like the firings at Bell in particular, they happened exactly a week after Bell's annual Let's Talk Day, where they, you know, raise money and awareness for mental health. And obviously, I saw a lot of people who got fired posting about, you know, it's not great for my mental health, abruptly getting fired.
Yeah.
How do you think this looks for Bell's corporate image, like overall?
Well, I think, you know, Bell Let's Talk Day has been successful in drawing attention to the issue. There's no question about that. But it's also drawn increased scrutiny, right? I mean, it's still a company mm-hmm. that needs to make money, that cares about its bottom line. So it's kind of two streams, right? You can promote mental health, you can have that important conversation, but at the same time, it's also a company that makes some pretty difficult decisions sometimes. So, it's a tough one. I don't think it undermines the purpose of mental health awareness, for instance, but I also think it's totally fair for people to bring up that point, particularly if you just lost your job.
Right. Carver Brash, what do you think about the corporate optics of this?
Well, I've always said Bell Let's Talk is a trap They are listening to you. So if you're talking about your feelings, they will record that and play it back. I had a girlfriend that did this specifically to me often when I was vulnerable about my feelings. So I think we have to be very concerned about this situation. I appreciate mental health. I've got it myself. But we need to be sniffing out the danger here, David.
Okay, Robert Benzie, what do you think?
About Bell Let's Talk, I think it's a good initiative, and I'm glad they do it.
About the whole, like, you know, do you think the optics of like firing a bunch of people a week after Bell Let's Talks was a good idea?
You know, there's never a good time for these types of things. And to Laura's point, it was for sure a stressful situation for the scores of people who lost their jobs. You have to look at the bigger picture. And I think it's a good thing when a major corporation in Canada is bankrolling an initiative like Bell Let's Talk, because I'm old enough to remember when you didn't talk about mental health. You bottled things up. I mean, you ask our parents' generation, it's like, you know, let's just drink scotch and brood. We're not gonna, or maybe go to a shrink when we're at our wit's end. But, and if you have means, but I think that having everyone being able to speak openly about mental health is a really important thing. And frankly, the fact that so many people are speaking about mental health after they've lost their jobs tells you that it is such an okay subject for, it's not a taboo anymore. And I think if it makes the people feel better, makes people feel better and makes our society a better place, if we are talking about things. And look, Laura's correct. You can, it's easy for people to bash the company for doing this right after that. But I would rather that they actually bankroll something like Bell Let's Talk than don't do it at all.
All right. Good point. Mother of two, Donna, final word on this topic. How do you think the optics look for Bell firing all those people right after the Bell Let's Talk?
Listen, David, let me tell you something, okay? The fact of the matter is whenever you fire somebody, it's always going to be a bad time. The optics are always going to be bad, okay? This is a big company that they're firing a lot of people. These people have families. These people have children. It's always going to be a bad time, and the optics are always going to be bad. Let me tell you something else. Bell put a flyer in my mailbox for fiber optics. So let me tell you something else. They're worrying about another kind of optics, okay? Now, my mother Barbara has been on Valium since she was 25 years old. So mental health is a big discussion in our household, okay? Right. I myself have gone to couples counseling with my dear husband, Paul. It works, all right? Now, the fact is, if we're going to be talking about it, that's great. I myself have hashtagged, Bell Let's Talk about it on my own, you know, TikTok, on my Twitter. It's at Empty Nest I Wish on Twitter and on TikTok. And let me tell you something, David. I think anything that gets the conversation started is fine.
Okay, well said. And everyone check out Empty Nest. What was it?
Empty Nest I Wish on TikTok. I do a lot of hacks. I do a lot of hacks having to do with parchment paper and tinfoil. Okay. And let me tell you, it's going to save you time and money in your kitchen. That's all I got to say.
That sounds great. Right. That sounds really great.
Thank you. Thank you, Carver.
You're welcome, Donna.
Check that out, everybody. All right. So let's turn to Ontario, and we're going to talk about paid sick days. Businesses, both large and small, and healthcare professionals across the province have repeatedly asked Ontario Premier Doug Ford to legislate paid sick days, but the Premier has dug in and refuses. Here's a clip of Premier Ford talking to Breakfast Television on February 16th as to why Ontario doesn't need paid sick days.
Out of the $1.1 billion the federal government has, they've only spent, right across the entire country, $319 million. So why would we go double dip into the pockets of the taxpayers when there's a program already in place?
Now, the federal program that the Premier talked about has some issues. Here's a clip of registered nurse Carolina Jimenez talking to City News also on February 16th about the federal program.
Workers have to have lost at least 50% of their wages for the week before they can apply. With paid sick days, people would just be able to call in and they would get their full income on their next paycheck.
And here's another clip with Ms. Jimenez talking about why paid sick days are important and who benefits.
We know that without paid sick days, workers are in the impossible decision of choosing between staying home and following public health advice or going to work sick. I don't have paid sick days. A lot of my colleagues don't have paid sick days. A lot of the people in the healthcare ecosystem don't have paid sick days.
The federal program is only $500 per week and only applies to those isolating with COVID-19. British Columbia and the Yukon have already added legislation to complement paid sick day money from the feds. So, panel, is Premier Ford right? Is there already enough federal money for this, or does Ontario need to legislate paid sick days? Laura Stone, why don't we start with you?
Well, look, this has become a huge political flashpoint, right? This is one of the most heated debates at Queen's Park, and I wouldn't be surprised if it makes its way into the next provincial election. Particularly, the NDP has really seized on this as one of their key points in trying to criticize the government throughout the pandemic. I think a few things can be true at once. I think there is a federal program that is underutilized, clearly, and the federal government actually extended it to 1 month. But it also, as many people have pointed out, many people have said that it's inadequate in terms of how much it pays out, and the fact that you have to submit an application. If I get sick, I can call my boss and I don't have to worry about losing my day's pay or having to go through the rigmarole of an application process. So look, I think there's a lot of business interests here. I think there's some small businesses support it, some don't. And I think it's also important to remember that Ontario only had 2 paid sick days under the previous government. It's not like we went from 14 to 0. So I think there's certainly room for improvement on all fronts. And it has been one of the most politically important issues of the pandemic.
Carver Brash, what do you think? Do you think that the premier's right that we don't, that Ontario doesn't need to implement paid sick days, or should we do this?
Right. Yeah. It's hard for me because I have never been sick and will never get sick. So relating to this is complicated. But it does bring up for me a personal issue that it does make me side with Doug. You know, he seems like a cool guy. You know, at one point my brother got a very terrible infection from a back tattoo.
Oh, and nasty.
It was bad. It was really bad. And the work has still not been completed. But my mother, she was gotten herself all caught up in this pearl company. And so she did not have the funds to support my brother. And she's calling me and she's telling me I got to pay for his bills. I got to help him out. I got to clean the dressings on the wound. Right. You know what? And that was a lot of pressure, David. And so I can see the situation Doug's in. So I am on his side here because me and my brother, we still have not talked, you know? So I don't want that to happen to Doug and the people of this province.
Okay. Robert Benzi, what do you think? Is the premier right, or do we need to implement paid sick days during the pandemic at least?
Well, I mean, he's not wrong in saying that there are paid sick days. I mean, as Laura said, there's actually 20 paid sick days federally. It's only $500 a week, and it's actually only $450 a week because the federal government inexplicably takes $50 off in tax. So, right. but you know, $500 a week is not a living wage in Ontario in the year 2021. So I think I've asked senior conservatives why they don't have paid sick days. I mean, they cut the 2 days that we used to have in Ontario under former Liberal Premier Kathleen Wynne when they won the election in 2018. That was one of the things that they scrapped, including, and they also scrapped the hike to the minimum wage that was supposed to be at $15. But I when I ask Tories why aren't they just doing this, they say because businesses can't afford it. And that's one thing you have to remember. This isn't a government program. This is something that, the local shop or employer would have to pay to have their employee not be at work. Having said that, it is clear that workplace outbreaks of COVID-19 have been a huge driver of this infection. So, I mean, at some point, I think that the provincial government will have to act. I don't know if it'll be in the budget later this month, if there'll be something there, but they're going to have to do something because they're taking a lot of heat. And Laura's correct. It will be an issue in the next election if they don't do something about it now.
Donna, what do you think? Do we need to implement paid sick days during the pandemic or at all? Or is the premier right, like, about the federal money during the pandemic?
David, let me tell you something, okay? Listen to this. You played a clip, okay? He said he was concerned with double dipping. He's concerned about stopping the gravy train. This man is a man obsessed with sauces. He's obsessed with sauces, and I say somebody make him a sandwich because maybe it'll put him in a better mood, okay? Because I know when my blood sugar, it gets low, I start to get real cranky. They call me Momzilla around the house. It's insane. But let me tell you this, David. Let me tell you something. My son, he's 26. His name is Michael, and he's a librarian. Mm-hmm. He has since moved back in with me.
Right.
The libraries have since closed, David. And let me tell you something, okay? If my son, my jewel of a boy, if he were to get sick, David, mm-hmm. and he would have to go to work, and he would have to infect all the people that come in. A lot of elderly people, David, come into the libraries, okay? A lot of the unhomed come in. They use the bathroom. There are children there, okay, David? That's a lot of vulnerable populations going in. If he could just pick up the phone and say, hey, guess what? I'm not feeling well. Something's coming out of my tush. I'm not coming in. And they say, fine, that's fine. That's great. Now, my son has a safety net, okay? He's living with me. Mm-hmm. He's living with my husband, Paul. We love him. We love having him here. Not everybody has that safety net, David. So I think somebody ought to make this guy a sandwich,
right?
And just let him get on the paid sick days. We're in the middle of a pandemic, for Christ's sake. You know what I mean? Jesus Christ, have a heart. You know, David, just have a heart.
Have a heart. There you go. And you know what? Let's move on to our next topic, Ontario election funding. The Ontario government introduced new election spending legislation. Under the new law, individual donations will double from $1,650 to $3,300. The per vote subsidies for political parties will be extended until 2024, and there will be a tighter limit placed on political action committee advertising. Groups such as the Pro-Tory Ontario Proud and the Pro-Liberal Working Families spent over $5 million in the 6 months leading up to the last provincial election. So panel, what do you think of these changes to Ontario election spending? Let's start with the 100% increase in individual donations. Robert Benzie, why don't we start with you?
Well, I mean, one thing that it's important to remember, David, is that the laws changed actually after a lot of work that my newspaper did a few years ago when Kathleen Wynne was premier. The limits were close to $10,000, $9,975 was a donation limit for individuals, and corporations were allowed to donate. And there were loopholes so that you could actually donate up to $30,000 in a year. So Wynne changed that rule 5 years ago, and it went down to $1,200 when the Tories, the donation limit, and they banned corporate and union donations. When the Tories won the election 3 years ago, they raised it a little bit, but kept the ban on corporate and union donations. So what's happened is Ontario is in the middle of the pack, according to Ford, in terms of how much people can donate. In Quebec, for example, they can only donate $100, but in other provinces, you can donate much more. One of the reasons that they did change it, and they won't tell you this, the Tories, is that mm-hmm. they have a lot of people who are maxed out at donating $1,650 a year who could donate $3,300 without blinking an eye. So, I mean, that was one reason why they did it. They kept the public subsidy because all the political parties are having a tough time raising money during the pandemic. And under the public subsidy, the Tories get, I think it's $5.7 million. And the New Democrats get about almost $5 million. And the Liberals get almost $3 million. And the Greens get about $700,000. So there is an argument to be made for the people out there who believe in proportional representation, that the per vote subsidy is the best way to make your vote count, because the party mm-hmm. you vote for, regardless of where you live, gets money for your vote. But I mean, look, this is a pretty mild change. Going from 1,650 to 3,300 is not the end of the world. And the fact that they kept the ban on union and corporate donations is interesting and probably important.
Okay. Mother Tudana, what do you think about the 100% increase and about the extension of the per vote subsidies?
David, listen, let me tell you something. My father, God rest his soul, he always used to say to me, Peanut, he used to call me Peanut because I have a severe peanut allergy. He thought it was very funny. My father was a very ironic man. Anyway, that's beside the point. He used to say to me, Peanut, if you have to ask how much it is, you can't afford it. And I think if these politicians have to ask how much it is to run, they probably shouldn't be running. Now, let me tell you something else, David. I'm not a political person, okay? I try to keep my politics and I try to keep sex off the dinner table, if you know what I mean. No, my husband, Paul, and I are very affectionate. But anyway, David, I give to very few charities. I give to one. It's called Pause for Pups, P-A-U-S-E, Pause for Pups. And it's funny because it's a play on words. I don't know if you got that. But anyway.
I did.
Very good, David. You know, I always thought that you were a funny person. But anyway, David.
Thank you.
And I say to myself, you know, there's got to be a lot of charities out there that are worthy of giving. You know, they're worthy of your money. So I say, think about that. Think about that before you think about giving $3,600 to Douglas Ford.
All right. Good point. Laura Stern, what do you think about the 100% increase to individual donations and the extension of the per vote subsidies?
Well, I think the extension of the per vote subsidy is – is really interesting, and it's in a way it's designed to kind of protect the government from criticism, because the other parties will be benefiting from this as well. And it is something that the opposition pushed for when the government had previously promised that to cancel this. Right. So in a way, you know, you can say, and we've seen the NDP argue in question period about this, that the government is trying to pad its coffers with taxpayer money. Well, I mean, they're getting money too. And the more votes they get, the more money they'll get. So I think in a way that the government is trying to appease them and protect themselves. And I do agree that, you know, $3,300, or that could actually be triple that, $9,000 during an election year, because you can donate to candidates and constituency associations as well. So there is an opportunity to give more at certain times. Right. But this isn't, you know, the kind of money that we see in the United States, for instance, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars spent by private interests during an election. I think one of the more interesting things that the government did was try to clamp down on the influence of unions and other third party groups like the right-leaning Ontario Proud to have them spend less money leading up to elections. So I think that is a way to inoculate the government from some of those new union attacks that that they would be expect to see in the next 12 months before Ontario's next election.
You know, with regard to the political action committees like Ontario Proud and Working Families, do we even need them? Like, is there a purpose for them? Like Ontario Proud, I mean, both sides, it's just really negative advertising. You rarely find out who they're being backed by. Does it add to our democracy at all to have these third-party groups play a part in our election? Carver Brash, why don't we start with you?
That makes me sick. It makes me absolutely sick. I mean, I've always said, I don't want these people coming in and influence me. I think that everyone running should get $300, and you got to make that work. I have been running as an alternative candidate for my own personal city council situation for the last 5 years. Have I won? Not yet, David. But what I do is I get myself some Bristol board from the Dollarama, and I get creative. And then I have a neighbor who has kind of a sick horse. And I do tape the sides to the horse, and I take the horse into town. And the kids like it. The adults are like, what's going on here? And then the horse kind of gets dizzy, and people get worried. And then that's when I give them my speech. And I think if we could kind of take a bit, you know, a lesson from me and my mode, I think we could have things be a lot more fair. I'd love to see them stretch it all.
Okay. Robert Benzu, what do you think? Do we need these PACs, these political action committees? Do they give anything to our democracy?
Well, I mean, you can argue that if me and my neighbors want to gather around and oppose something or propose something, that we should be allowed to take out advertising to promote that or to attack that. So, I mean, there, if I can be egalitarian about this, I think that in a perfect world, it would be nice if we didn't have to have these kinds of groups. Sorry, we don't live in a perfect world. So I'm not saying that we need third-party groups like Ontario Proud or Working Families, but we live in a liberal democracy, and people are allowed to express themselves. Like, and why should the government curb how I express myself or how you express yourself?
Interesting. Donna, what do you think?
You know what, David? I'd like to make a point. Let me tell you something. I'd like to make a point going back to what Carver was saying, because when he was in eighth grade, my son, Glenn, he ran for class president. And let me tell you something. They had a $10 limit. And the things that my son did with that amount of money, honest to God, I'm getting a little bit choked up right now, because he thought of his slogan all by himself, David. His name is Glenn. His slogan was, if not now, Glenn. Oh, and let me tell you something, David. He lost. But
so if we, it wasn't now.
It wasn't now, but he has a very bright future, David. Let me tell you something. He is at York University right now. He is studying virtually biology. Do you know how hard it is to catch your own frog, David? It's difficult. He's dissecting that at home. He's using my good knives. But let me tell you something, David. Carver is right. If you can't afford to run on the amount of money that you have, you have to get creative you go down to Michael's, you get yourself some t-shirts, you get yourself some bleach, you get yourself some stencils, you get yourself a Cricut, you make yourself some t-shirts, and you go for it, David. Because if not now, Glenn.
Oh, I just got shivers. And that is grassroots. That's grassroots,
thank
David.
You.
That is. Laura Stone, you get the last word. I mean, we should shouldn't we be taking money out of politics? I mean, I know with Ontario Proud, there was a lot of controversies like where they were getting their money. And I think it came out, I could be wrong, it was from developers. And if we can see during the Ford years so far, he's really all in for developers. Like for him, when he says I'm for the little guy, it seems to me that really means developers. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, the reason we know that is because there is disclosure for these groups, and that's really important, I think. It might not be real time, but we do see who's donating them, and they do have to register. These groups do speak to a certain audience, you know, just because they might be extremely polarizing. And in the case of Ontario Proud, there was a lot of analysis after the 2018 election about the role they played in taking down Kathleen Wynne and some of the incendiary language that they used to combat her. So, they're not without criticism and they're not without scrutiny, but they also have an audience and they also speak to a large part of the electorate, or certainly the part of the electorate that believes in what they're saying. So I do think there are elements of it that make people uncomfortable. And I think that most Canadians don't want to see us descend into what we see in the United States with just constant attack ads and, polarization. And we saw it in the Trump years. People don't want that. But I think there is a way to kind of allow it, to keep it reasonable. And mm-hmm. transparency is key here.
Okay. Very good point. Let's move to our last topic. Do you want to drink alcohol at 7-Eleven? U.S. convenience store chain 7-Eleven wants to serve beer and wine at its Ontario locations. Customers would also have to purchase food to eat with the alcohol, and all alcohol must be consumed on the premises. So, panel, does drinking beer or wine at 7-Eleven appeal to any of you? Carver, why don't we start with you?
Yes. yes. I mean, there are a lot of movers and shakers at 7-Eleven. You can learn a lot if you hang out there. And I think this is a wonderful idea. This is actually a part of my platform personally. As a great thing about 7-Eleven is wherever your night goes, you're ready to do it. Okay. You're in the 7-Eleven, you're having a couple pops, you're feeling good, okay? And you want to get some snacks, they're there. You meet a nice gal, there's a way to, be safe with her later. You get a headache, they got pills for that. So I just think it's a really wonderful idea, and I see absolutely nothing wrong with it. Thank you for asking.
Okay. Robert Benzi, would you like to go for a drink of alcohol at 7-Eleven?
Yeah, there's nothing like drinking more than under fluorescent lights and very brightly lit, where big gulps and Slurpees are being served, David. I don't blame 7-Eleven for applying for these licenses. Mm-hmm. It's not as simple, though, as that. Under the master framework agreement that the Ontario government signed with the beer store and the brewers, Labatt Molson and Sleeman, back in 2015, which allowed the sale of beer and wine in grocery stores. There's about 450 grocery stores in Ontario that sell beer and wine. I know it's hard to believe that it's not all of them, but anyway, that's Ontario for you. It's a very Presbyterian place. But under that agreement, 7-Eleven and other convenience stores cannot sell alcohol. But with the pandemic, the Progressive Conservative government loosened licensing laws so that restaurants could serve alcohol to go. So that's why Ontario suddenly feels like there's a wine shop on every corner, because your local restaurant that can't invite people in to sell, to sit and eat, can sell you something to go. And that's a really good thing. It's probably the only good thing that's come out of this pandemic, is that we've liberalized our alcohol laws so that every restaurant can sell off-license sales. So I'm not sure that this will happen the way that 7-Eleven hopes it will happen, especially since 7-Eleven, under brightly lit, fluorescent lights and hot dogs on those rollers, that's not really a place to enjoy a Campari and soda.
No, I mean, as well, I have 7-Eleven around the corner from me. which I haven't been to during the pandemic, to be honest. And it's at times a bit dodgy in there, to be honest. And I feel for the staff. I think about the staff, like that they're already dealing with drunks, but now they have to serve alcohol in there. I just think, to me, it just seems like it would be a lot worse. Donna, what do you think? Would you want to get some beer? Would you go for a drink at a 7-Eleven?
David, let me tell you something. I know people look at me and they think that's a wine mom. You know what I mean? Yeah. I know people look at me and they think that I have coasters that say, you know, it's wine o'clock somewhere or Chardonnay all day, or I have a t-shirt that says, you know, why make reservations when you can have wine? I don't know what those t-shirts say, David. I'm not that person. I will admit there have been times I have taken my sons to their hockey games and I have had a little bit of Bailey's in my coffee in a thermos. Okay. I will admit to that. But let me tell you something, David. Do you know who hangs out at 7-Eleven? Kids. Kids hang out at 7-Eleven, David. Do you know why? Because there's delicious treats there. There's candy, there's gum, there's chocolate, there's Slurpees. David, I don't want my kids getting a Slurpee at the same place that they could get a bottle of vodka or a bottle of gin. Let me tell you something, David. These kids, we need to protect these kids because the world is out to get them now, David. And I just thank God that my two sons are beyond that age where I have to worry about them walking to school, walking home, getting predatored, getting abducted. Like, let me tell you something, David. Up nights. I did not sleep from year 1 to year 18. Let me tell you that.
Okay. Laura Stone, do you have any interest in going for a drink at 7-Eleven?
I do not personally, but I could see sort of a contingent of hipsters who, you know, would treat this as the latest dive bar, the hot new dive bar in downtown Toronto. Like, I actually think the novelty of it might attract some people. I just think this is one of the weirdest stories of recent times. I don't think anyone is asking for this. I don't think this is a top priority for Ontarians. I think during the pandemic, this is kind of the last thing that people are thinking about. I think it would make sense. You know, obviously the government ran on getting beer and wine in corner stores. That hasn't worked out as they had hoped. It would make a lot more sense for a takeaway shop at 7-Eleven as opposed to a drink-in establishment, if I could call it that.
But then there's like be a huge penalty.
That was a lot more complex than the government had hoped that it would be. And they kind of tried to strong arm their way out of the agreement, and that hasn't turned out. So, you know, whether this will become a reality at any point in the near future, I really can't say. I think it's quite bizarre, but we've also kind of heard the premier promoting this as good for Ontario businesses or in some way helping the economy. So I'll be interested to know whether I'll be able to pop by for a Pinot Grigio at some point in the next few months.
And, you know, speaking of bizarre stories, it's time for us to now play Fact or Fiction. Each month while doing research for the show, I come across a story that makes me think this is the craziest story I've ever read. And then I find a few more stories that are just as crazy. So we're going to now use some of these stories and play Fact or Fiction. I'm going to read a headline, and then I'll ask each panelist if they think it's a factual headline or fiction. Feel free to play along at home. Okay, here we go. Our first headline. New York City woman discovers empty apartment behind her bathroom mirror. Fact or fiction? Donna, let's start with you.
David, this is a stone cold fact. I know this because for a brief time, I visited New York City. I saw three Broadway shows, Godspell, Book of Mormon, and Chicago. And the places that we visited, the places that we saw, I'm like, what is behind these walls, David? And I would not be surprised if there was a full apartment with a full family living back there since 1943.
Okay. Laura Stone, what do you think? Is this factual or fiction?
I'm going to go with fiction.
Okay. And Carver Brash, what do you think? Fact or fiction?
Well, I have lived in a place like this. So I'm going to say fact.
You're going to say fact. And Robert Benzie, what do you think?
I'm going to say fiction because there's no way an apartment could stay empty in New York for long.
Okay. That's a very good point, Robert. But you know what? It is 100% a fact.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. And it's from yesterday's news from March 5th, NBC News website. A woman felt a breeze in her apartment, found it was coming from behind her bathroom mirror, took it off. There was a hole in the wall, and it opened up into a whole another apartment that was empty. Yeah, it was all over. She Instagrammed the whole discovery. You can check it out on the NBC News website from March 5th. Okay, our next fact or fiction headline. Cambridge University maths professor proves his theorem by winning the Pick 3 lottery 5 days in a row. fact or fiction? Robert Benzie, what do you think?
I'm going to say it's fiction because, I mean, if you could beat the lottery that easily, someone would have done it before this Cambridge maths professor.
Okay. Donna, what do you think?
David, let me just say one thing first. I think it's adorable the way people from Britain put an S on math. And I think I might start doing it. Honest to God. Just class up Woodbridge. You know what I mean? But David, let me tell you something. I think this is a fact because I saw something on breakfast television where a guy was talking about maths. He was talking about maths and he was talking about formulas and he said that there was a formula, you could do this.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. Laura Stone, what do you think? Fact or fiction?
I'm going to go with fiction because it just sounds too good to be true.
Okay. Kyra Brash, what do you think? Too good to be true or is it a fact?
If this was a fact, we would not have heard about it. This man would have been taken down by the government immediately. They want us to be gamblers, David. So this cannot be true.
Cannot be true. And you know what, Carver? You are 100% right. It is totally fiction. I made it up. And it's interesting, Donna, you know, I lived in the UK for nearly 7 years and it was annoying to me, the argument over math or maths. Did I study math? Did I study maths? It was a constant issue. Plus the fact that people in the UK cannot spell my last name. So it's S-H-O-R-E, but they spell it S-H-A-W.
Oh, Shaw. Yes, that makes sense because of the accent. Yep.
Right.
Yeah, there you
David
go.
Shaw. Yeah.
David Shaw. That's right. Okay, and let's go ahead with our final fact or fiction headline. Miami lawyer whose pants caught fire during arson trial arrested on cocaine charges. Fact or fiction? Laura Stone, let's start with you.
I'm going to go with fact because I love it. Because I thought everything else was a fiction up until now, so I'm just hoping this one is true.
Okay, Carver Brash, what do you think? Fact or fiction?
Well, I think we all know the classic poem, Liar, Liar, Pants on Fire. And I think we all know that lawyers are liars. So, I mean, this feels real to me.
Okay, you say it's a fact. And Robert Benzie, what do you think?
Oh, David, it's Florida, man. It has to be fact.
I know. I wanted to save this for Andrew, but I really couldn't. So,
Coin is with us in spirit.
It's true. Donna, what do you think? Fact or fiction? Miami lawyer whose pants caught fire during arson trial arrested on cocaine charges.
David, call me a regular Snoop Dogg millionaire because I think that this is true because I have spent time in Miami. And let me tell you something, David. That happens. People just spontaneously combust on the street. Mm-hmm. Just you're walking down the street, you're listening to Gloria Estefan. Next thing you know, boom, you're on fire.
Well, you know what, Donna? You're right, because it's 100% a fact. And that's from the February 16th Miami Herald. It's worth checking out the article to read about the time his pants caught fire while he was defending an arsonist. It was part of the defense and it got him in trouble because it was kind of I don't know if the grandstanding is the right word, but it got him in trouble. And guess what, everybody? That is the end of the show.
Yes.
Yay. Oh. I'd like to thank our panelists, Laura Stone, Robert Benzie, Kayla Lorette as the not real Carver Brash, and Jan Caruana as the completely fake mother of two Donna. Music for the panel show podcast is provided by Jim Clayton. You can get more info about our show on our website, thepanelshow.com, and also follow us on Facebook under The Panel Show Podcast or on Twitter at Panel Show Pod. My name is David Shore. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you like the show, please subscribe and give us a review. Thanks, everybody. Thank you.